Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, I have a returning guest. It has been such a long time since I have spoken with Denise Van Vliet, but I am delighted to have her back to talk about her best-selling book, Happy Birthday, You Have Cancer. Denise has completed over 500 hours of massage in a massage therapy program and has learned about reflexology, deep tissue, various forms of massage techniques and hypnotherapy, craniosacral therapy, and after completing massage school, she took more classes including myofascial release, medical massage, craniosacral therapy through the Up Ledger Institute, Bowen Technique, and Muscle Release Technique. So she's got quite a bit of experience. She's also completed her Doctorate of Divinity degree and has studied in the Theocratic Ministry School for many years and also has studied Buddhist Zen philosophy. Denise's book, Happy Birthday, You Have Cancer, is available from Amazon.com, and I do have a direct link to her book there in the show page description. And you can also find out more about Denise by visiting her website, which is www.denisevanvliet.com, and that's DeniseVanVliet.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description as well. So I'd like to welcome Denise to the show. Hello, Denise.
Hi, Robert. Thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure, and like I say, it has literally been years since we have chatted, so I am so glad to have you back.
It has been years, and absolutely, and so much has happened in those years. Absolutely.
To me, one of my biggest delights is speaking with someone like you and then seeing you go through so many things and then write another book and then come back and chat. And to me, it's wonderful. It's a great connection. And also, we're connected on Facebook. So those of you folks out there who are on Facebook, be sure to join us both there. So, boy, a best-selling book. I bet you didn't see that coming when you wrote it, did you? Or did you?
I didn't, and I think when we share from the heart, people listen, and it's an honor to get that title, best-selling book on Amazon. So I'm grateful.
Yeah, it's very much so. So, you know, I've had several authors on the show who have talked about their struggle or their journey with a cancer diagnosis and what has followed them. The one thing that I have learned is that each person's journey is so unique. And, you know, many times they bring in a lot of their journey. Like for you, example, you have quite a background in holistic health and that kind of thing. So, you know, I'm sure your journey is unique compared to some that I have had on before. So I always enjoy speaking with someone about this because there are people out there every day, someone's life is touched, you know, by cancer. And it's something that I don't think we can talk enough about.
Absolutely. And many of us, you know, when you get that diagnosis of cancer, you start only thinking of the bad side. And when I look back, I was 35 years old when I was first diagnosed with cancer. And I started going down that path of negative thinking. It's like, oh my God, this is such a bad thing, you know, actually looking death in the face. And I'm going to be 49 this summer. So
wow.
It will be, 14 years since that diagnosis and the doctor telling me, you know, I could be dead in 2 years, you know, that kind of thing. But when I look back, I see the gift in it because with that diagnosis, my whole world changed. And it opened up more choices for me that I never knew I had. So you're put into that situation of, oh my gosh, I have cancer. You start thinking of the future. And what I did was I started looking back and realizing that it was all of my choices that led me to that point of that diagnosis of cancer. And so with all the choices that I made up until that point, I decided right then and there to take responsibility for them. And with that opened up my spiritual path. And so I started learning about the body and learning about choices. And looking back, you know, I didn't become a massage therapist until after the diagnosis of cancer. And so it really drew me into research and learning and energy work and how the body works, and not only how the body works, but how we behave every day and the choices, our behaviors that drive our choices. And so it's been quite a journey the last 14 years. And I'm hoping that, you know, anybody listening with a diagnosis of cancer, that, yes, there is that bad side, but with everything, there is the opposite side as well. And from my perspective, I consider it all from the divine.
Yeah, you know, that's the one thing that I think most people, when they're confronted with death, you know, I mean, you know, sometimes I think we just kind of go day by day and really don't think about the fact that tomorrow may not be here, or maybe even tonight may not be here, you know. And when you have a diagnosis like that, it kind of shakes you out of a routine, you know, and it kind of really forces you to look at things, look at the fact that our lives are, you know, don't go on forever. And I didn't realize that this had happened before you did all of the massage and all of that. That's quite a long time from the diagnosis and your journey with that to the time of publishing the book. So why so long, and what, you know, why did you feel that it was important, you know, to make that to write the book?
There was a point when I started to open up my own business in 2007. I opened up my own office in Illinois, and I started speaking to women and women groups and also individually helping people through cancer and helping people connect with their own spirit, that people started telling me, you should write the book. So a lot of the stuff that I write about in the book, I practiced for years. And so all of these things that I have in the book, they're tools that I use. And you mentioned earlier that, you know, when somebody's diagnosed with cancer, it's a very individual journey. You're absolutely right. But when you're on this journey and you don't have any tools, that's what I started looking for, and using these tools that I write about. And, you know, one of them is Kill the Interpreter. Well, I'm one of my day jobs. I'm a sign language interpreter. And this interpreter is that little voice in our head that interprets everything and judges everything automatically. And so when I would catch myself doing that, I would think, oh, kill that damn interpreter, because I am an interpreter. I know what that entails. It's like your brain has to make a judgment about everything that we experience in our external world. And so when we become aware of that, that's just one of the tools that I started using. And what I noticed is that little internal dialogue, or the little interpreter voice that judges everything and makes some kind of comment about everything, I didn't realize how much that really talked. I mean, when you sit back and just listen to what your thoughts are saying, it's like, that was kind of an awakening for me, and that was probably one of the very first tools that I started to incorporate within my own healing. And so with these tools, I call them tools, but they really help me, like the need to please syndrome. I know we talked about that earlier. It's like NPS is what I call it, the need to please syndrome. And I can speak for women especially, but I do see it in men too, is this need to be accepted. And so in order to be accepted, we've got to please. And sometimes we're pleasing, wanting to be accepted and pleasing people that really shouldn't be in our lives, that they're more of a toxic thing. And I started to really realize that. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm bending over backwards for this person, and I really don't like this person. Why am I doing this? You know what I'm saying? It's like this internal need to want to be accepted. But what I realized was that I was not accepting myself. And so that was internal work that I really worked on for years. And it's accepting the choices that I had made my life and understanding and realizing the choices that I was not aware of until I got cancer.
Yeah.
And now so, all of a sudden I see these choices.
Yeah. And there's several things I want to kind of address. First of all, I guess why don't we stick with the choices for a minute. Do you feel that, you know, when you received that diagnosis, that you talk about accepting responsibility for the choices made, you know, and you know, I think we, a lot of times people can kind of look back and say, oh, you know, I did this and this and that, and that's what kind of got me here. But do you think that by, you know, once you get that that diagnosis, that you not only look at the choices made, but you also are more like hyper vigilant about choices to be made?
That's a really good question. Hypervigilant.
I don't know where that came from. But
I'm an interpreter, so I'm trying to, like, how would I sign hypervigilant? I mean, I would think be extra cautious.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is before cancer, I might have seen one or two choices.
Okay.
After cancer, and especially during this time, I see a whole slew of choices. So now it's like my eyes are more wide open, and I can see, okay, this choice my heart is kind of going in the direction of, whereas this choice my ego might be going in the direction of. So I become more aware of the draw, what's drawing me to that choice, and I become more aware of the behavior maybe, and I'm not aware of, I'm becoming aware every single day of interesting behaviors, but that drive us. But that's what I mean by, like, choices suddenly opening up, and also intuition. I think walking around blind and disconnected from my own body also disconnected me from my intuition. And so once I made the choice to really listen to my body and what my body needed, I began to really connect with that intuition. And that's around 2007, 2008, what is that, 7 years after diagnosis in 2001, I started learning more about energy and reading energy and everything connected with it. And so when people started coming to me, I realized, okay, I've been through this experience. Now my external reality is bringing me others that are going through this experience, and we're here to help each other. And so that's what really helped me too to write the book, is that, you know, we're here to help each other. And if something worked for something, let's share it and talk about it, try it, see if it works for you, that kind of thing. And I think that's what drives the choices.
Yeah. No, I can understand that, yes. And you know, I'm just so, for me, you know, the idea of, you know, each day, recognizing that each day, you know, we have hundreds of choices and decisions that we make, you know, and so many of them are unconscious, you know, and driven by either habit or beliefs, and sometimes, you know, false beliefs, you know, but kind of bringing the awareness that there is a choice to be made, really, I think, just brings about a sense of freedom, you know, to be able to kind of break up a negative pattern, maybe get rid of that, not get rid of, kind of not give attention to that toxic person or that toxic relationship or situation, you know, toward one that is more nurturing for yourself.
Exactly. And sometimes the choice to decide that something is toxic blinds us to the possibilities of why that's in our experience. And so we can choose to say, okay, well, that's toxic. That person's toxic. I'm not going to let that person in my life. But that person, quote unquote, or that situation will keep coming up in my life until I decide to face it and see the other side of it. Because the other side of it is going to, I mean, we have yin and yang. We see the bad side only. But sometimes to turn it around, we have to really take a look at ourselves first to see that other side. So if we're looking at somebody that is toxic, that we're labeling toxic, usually a person is acting out or behaving because there's something deep within them that is going on, and we're responding to it. We're making the choice to respond to it. And so what I've learned is to say, oh, wow, there's something really bubbling up within inside me from this person. This person's bubbling something up inside me, and it's an opportunity for me to go in and say, all right, what's going on in my internal world that I'm reacting to my external world? And so that's a choice, and that's a choice I never knew I had.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and you're so right, you know, about the getting to the root of why this person or a person or situation that isn't to our best benefit is in our life, excuse me. And, you know, like, for example, you know, if we have someone who is, you know, demanding of attention and we constantly give them, you know, that attention, and like you said, you know, the one that, you were trying to, excuse me, please someone who is like, well, you know, why am I trying to bend over backwards to please this person? You know, and I think from what you're saying is that then you kind of go back and look at, you know, what is it in me that feels it necessary to have to please this person or everyone in my life?
Yes, and obviously the answer I found is I was not accepting of myself, so I needed somebody else to accept me. And that right there is what's toxic. It's not the person that's toxic.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's true. It's very true. And I'm really glad to be able to, you know, for us to make that distinction. You know, because I tend to fall into the interpreting of every situation as being, you know, something external to me, you know, rather than kind of taking that extra step and looking behind the scenes to see really what it means.
Exactly. And looking back, I wonder, maybe for me, because, you know, I'm a little hard-headed, and for me, in order to get that lesson, I had to get cancer.
I don't know.
I mean, but when I look at my behaviors and my choices that I made, it's no wonder I got cancer.
Yeah. Well, you know, and also, you know, one of the things that I have found with, you know, when it comes to cancer is that there's a, there's just so many lessons to be learned. I mean, there's the you know, that whole idea of our mortality, you know, and kind of, you know, what we do, you know, recognizing that we may not be here for much longer. You know, then there's also the choice of how to treat it, you know, whether holistically or through modern medicine. Then there's the effect that it has on other people, you know. I mean, everybody within your circle, you know. I mean, there's just so many things that I believe that, you know, just having the diagnosis of cancer or going through the, you know, a situation or journey of dealing with, overcoming, surviving, you know, whatever the journey is, that it really, to me, it seems to raise awareness of everyone who's associated with it.
Absolutely, because when one of us gets sick, we all get sick.
Yeah.
We all are sick.
Yeah.
So my whole family was affected. And when we're in that place, it's a, I don't want to say great place, but it's really an opportunity, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's really a wonderful opportunity, and I'm going to choose my words wisely because, you know, if you're diagnosed with stage four something, you may have only 3 months to live. What are you going to do with those 3 months knowing that some of the last rose petals are about to fall off in a few months? What are you going to do with those 3 months? Are you going to fight to live a few months longer, or are you going to seize the moment and live those 3 months? You may live those 3 months more than you live the past 58 years. So if that right there is a choice that, you know, should I get cancer again? There's the possibility. It's there. And if it is there, what choices will I make? And what I've done over the years is I do participate in shamanic ceremonies and medicines, plant medicines, natural medicines. And each time I do that, I go deeper and deeper within. And I'm at a point now where I'm okay if I die tomorrow. But somebody
mm-hmm.
who's getting cancer who may not have lived until, you know, that day of the diagnosis of cancer might not know that they have that choice. And most of us, we're not living.
Yeah. You know, I've seen this. I mean, in my family, you know, it's been one of those things that I've seen firsthand, and you know, and I see the struggle. You know, that someone who has a diagnosis goes through, as well as is the people, you know, who are immediately surrounding it. And you know, it's boy. I mean, to me, I think what I have found, most people really kind of, what it brings to the forefront for most people is the importance of living life every day to its fullest, no matter what. You know what I mean? Because I mean, the idea of someone else's, you know, mortality staring them in the face, it also brings it up for you, even though you may not be, like you said, you know, your family was impacted as well. So, I mean, it's one of those things where as well as, you know, any kind of sudden death or even someone with a terminal illness, you know, that it's one of those things where it seems that one of the most important lessons is live life, you know, you know, try to do it without regret and try to make the best choices possible.
Absolutely. And I found for myself that the best way to live life is to find that balance of giving and receiving. And so when I give, I'm open to receiving. And I know a lot of women, I don't know if in the book I talk about the gift of receiving. Speaking from a woman's standpoint, many of us, when we're given a compliment or somebody wants to do something for us, we shut it down. Oh, no, thank you. You don't have to do that. And what we don't realize is that we're shutting down the other person's opportunity to give. And so that really opened up more choices for me when somebody wanted to do something for me. It allowed me to feel somebody actually giving and receiving that fully from them. And this allowed me to give to myself and to recognize that I wasn't giving.
Hmm. Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, you know, that whole giving and receiving, because, you know, when you are going through the journey of treatment and that kind of thing, you have to do a whole lot of receiving. And you know, if you're not comfortable with it, then I mean, it's truly a lesson. And you know, and I agree with you. You know, many women, since they're many are primary caregivers in a way, you know, that mm-hmm. that it's always, you know, the giving aspect is very high on the list, and many will give, you know, sometimes to the detriment of themselves, you know, kind of burning the candle at both ends, or you know, trying to, you know, like you say, please everyone, you know, rather than take care of themselves. So, yeah, that
right.
That gift of receiving is important.
I'm sorry. I do work with women, and I do, like, some of the stories they tell me when they start to really connect with the receiving part. I talk about one particular client in my book where, you know, she gives all these wonderful gifts to her grandchildren, but when her grandchildren want to get her something, she's like, oh, no, no, honey, you don't have to do that. And so I talk to her, and imagine you're your grandchild wanting to give you something, and you say no, what do you think your grandchild is feeling? And she realized that she was shutting down the grandchild's opportunity to feel what it's like to give. And I'm like, you can feel the joy in that. And so it completely turned her around. She loves the fact that she's able to receive now from her grandchildren. And so being able to receive is, for a woman, it is freeing. It's absolutely freeing. It's like, okay, I can receive.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because when you put it like, you know, with that grandmother, when you put it in the example like that, it's funny because, you know, in essence, you're really telling her that it's okay for her to receive. But it's framed in a way so that it's really kind of more important for her to give the experience of grandchild giving than it is of the receiving. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's kind of like, I don't want to deprive my grandchild of that joy, you know?
Right.
So it kind of, in a way, I guess it, for some people, it kind of rationalizes, I guess, for lack of a better word, the reason for receiving.
Right. But she didn't feel it. So once she felt what it was like, because a lot of times, especially women, we're so disconnected from our emotions, she couldn't feel that she was depriving her grandchildren of the gift of giving. Mm. But until she imagined herself giving something to grandma, and grandma said, oh, no, 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 well, what does that feel like? And that really got her in her body to really feel what that is like. And so I work with women energetically, you know, with cranial sacral therapy and all that. Cranial sacral therapy is excellent for post-traumatic stress disorder. So I do work with women that have experienced sexual assault or domestic violence. And so when I'm working with them in cranial sacral therapy, I will ask them, bring your awareness into your body. Let me talk directly to your body. What is your body trying to tell you? And they're amazed at what comes up, and it gives them an opportunity to see what that feels like, to ask their body what it needs. And it's some profound healing, cranial sacral therapy. Yeah, my little plug there.
That's great. No, that's very important. Well, gosh, Denise, we're already halfway through the show. I mean, we're just like zipping right through here. So I want to take just a quick break, and do want to invite anyone who's listening, if you would like to call in and ask Denise any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And if you're listening in the chat room, feel free to post a question. So, Denise, we're going to take just a real quick break. And then when we come back, I kind of want to get your view. I indicated in the introduction that you've got your doctorate in divinity and also have studied Buddhist Zen philosophy. So I kind of would like to get your perspective of cancer and the diagnosis and how you view it from both of those lenses. Okay.
Thank you. Yes, that would be lovely.
Okay, great. Okay, great. Everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back in about 90 seconds.
Lavender. Did you know that lavender comes from the same family as mint? And back in Elizabethan times, when baths weren't common practice, lavender was used to perfume clothes and bed linen. In the language of flowers, lavender can mean devotion, luck, success, or happiness. Lavender essential oil and its ability to calm and soothe irritated skin is what sold me on essential oils and led me to explore its other uses, like applying to a pillow or to the bottom of my feet prior to sleeping for my insomnia. It's useful for burns, stretch marks, and minimizing scarring. And I thoroughly enjoy combining it with peppermint for an amazing scalp massage and lavender's calm emotional extremes. This essential oil and many other wellness products are available at our wellness store. There you will find information about retail shopping, how to become a preferred member, saving 20% on purchases, and how to become a wellness advocate and shop at wholesale prices with the added opportunity for you to make money. Make your health and wellness a priority today by visiting www.biteradio.me and clicking on the wellness link.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And if those of you who have followed me on Facebook, you know I'm starting my little alchemy with essential oils, and just got a whole new batch of wild orange and patchouli and all kinds of stuff. So anyway, it's something I'm having fun with. So that's one of those things that I set up for myself is to have fun this year with. So, okay, back to today's show. Again, my very special guest is Denise Van Vliet. She is author of Happy Birthday, You Have Cancer. And again, her book is available. It's a best-selling book, is available at Amazon.com. And I have a direct link to her book there in the show page description, as well as a link to Denise's webpage that you can go there and contact her directly about the book or any other topic that we're discussing today. So we're back, Denise.
Thank you.
Oh, great. Let's see. Okay, let's go ahead and talk about the diagnosis from the perspective of, you know, the divinity perspective and the Buddhist one.
Yes, divinity. To me, God is divine. Male and female, and from a Buddhist, as well from a Buddhist perspective. There's no gender, there's both genders. And after learning about Buddhism, and there's the religion of Buddhism, and then there's those that follow the philosophy of it, that live the philosophy of it, and Zen Buddhism, that we are nothing, there's nothing there, but then there's everything there. And so the possibilities are all there. And so I did decide to go ahead and get my Doctor of Divinity degree because I was involved in an organized religion for almost 20 years. And I did the ministry school, and I learned how to speak actually in front of an audience and learned how to prepare speeches and stuff like that. So I'm very blessed about that. But I wanted to do more, and I wanted to do more for those that didn't really follow any particular religion, and that's where Buddhism comes in, because Buddhism, to me, isn't really a religion. It's going right down the middle. It's like, hey, we have the far left, and that could be true, and we have the far right, and that could be true. And so you go right down the middle path, and within that middle path comes a lot less suffering, like the Buddha said. And so I decided to go ahead and get my Doctor of Divinity degree, and so I became a spiritual counselor. And so I do that through either distance-wise, doing spiritual counseling over the phone, or clients come to me for spiritual counseling. And I use various tools, working with nature spirits. I make my own flower essences, energy healing using the pendulum, using stones and crystals. It's pretty much whatever the body tells me. And since learning about the body and becoming a massage therapist and all the training that I've had, it's the training and then the energy coming together. It really helped me see both sides. A lot of disharmony within the body. We'll have the thoughts thinking one thing and the body wanting another thing, and you create a mismatch of vibrational energy. And so with the thought patterns and what's going on in the body, I work with those to help balance those out. And Zen Buddhism helps me, because somebody will say something and I could say that's true, but the other side is also true. And so keeping it right in the Buddhist philosophy and the spirituality of the person, it really helps me tune into what's happening in the body. And I used to always say that bodies speak to me, and they do. And so I've been dubbed a medical intuitive, I guess you can call those. It was one of those famous psychics that dubbed me a medical intuitive, Lisa Williams.
Oh, yeah.
I met her, and she's like, "Are you a medical intuitive?" That's like, I didn't even know that word existed. That must be it. So bodies do talk to me, and it allows me to, I don't know, it just unfolds so beautifully.
The body whisperer, Denise.
The body whisperer, yeah.
Well, you know, I think that's wonderful to be able to, to be able to recognize that, and, you know, really, because so often we are out of sync with our bodies. I mean, you know, any disease is the body out of sync. And, you know, I think it's wonderful to be able to, you know, to bring the tools that you have, you know, to that, and be able to, you know, to help your clients with that. But it sounds like that you're going through your discovery, self-discovery regarding the body, really was kind of a launching point for that to happen.
Absolutely. And it started with, okay, this cancer, and what does my body need? And really starting asking questions. And I learned a lot of stuff on the way. I don't know if you're familiar with, I don't know if it's okay to say this name anymore, but he was my doctor, Dr. Mercola, and he taught me EFT. And so with that EFT, I've learned to pass that on to other people as well. And it's a good way to really get direct communication with the subconscious and the energy within that body. And so that was really one of the first stepping stones right after I got cancer and working with Dr. Mercola and adjusting my diet and all that stuff. But I think it was EFT that really was a big stepping stone for me. And when I started really tapping on the meridians in the body, it really started to open up communication. And I think that's really what helps me connect with others that are in that same place, maybe stuck, needing help to move forward, or needing someone to say, oh, look, you have this choice over here. Did you see that? And they might not have seen that. And so it was a blessing to be able to learn that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. It's wonderful. Now, regarding your method of treatment, you know, with having a what was your choice of treatment? I noticed that, you know, one of the chapters in your book is called Chemical Warfare, so I'm kind of thinking that that might have something to do with the treatment process that you went through.
That actually has everything to do with what I was choosing to put in my body and all of the foods that were actually causing an immune response. So that's what I meant by chemical warfare. What I discovered with my body is that I was highly responsive, and I have to be careful not to use the word allergic, but I was highly responsive to gluten and grains. And so it was Dr. Mercola that started, you know, me getting off of grains. And I realized later on I went to see another doctor to have a full blood panel of all the foods that I react to. And I was just, the doctor told me in all the years she had been doing this, I was probably in the top five list of people that were the worst. And so I realized that when I put these foods into my body, other people, they eat, they have energy, they're ready to go. But my body was having a literal chemical warfare within it. And the doctor was telling me that based on my numbers and my reactions to certain foods, that it was actually causing inflammation on the brain, the surrounding tissue on the brain. And so when I realized that, this was like my next, this is what was holding me back from moving forward on my spiritual path, because I feel like, okay, I've worked on all these things, but what else is going on? And then when I realized how the body responds to the food that I'm eating, it's literally a chemical warfare in the body. And so I've focus on reducing inflammation in the body. And if you think about it, with cancer is a form of inflammation. It's cells that have started to go crazy off in another direction. And the other thing I learned along with that was my breathing. And I learned this later on, that what my breathing was affecting everything on a cellular level. And most of us, we think breathe in, take deep breaths in, and then let all the breath out. However, I learned that the body needs a certain level of CO2, and I did find myself breathing just a little bit heavier. It was not like a hyperventilation attack, like breathing like that all the time.
Right.
It was more like a chronic hyperventilation, where it was just enough over-breathing. And a lot of times we don't think about that at all, but it was explained to me, if you're starting a fire and you blow too much air on it, what happens to the fire?
Yeah, it definitely
blows out.
Yeah.
And so we think we need more oxygen in the body, let's breathe in more air. But actually that triggers stress responses in the body. So what I've learned to do was to relax and slow down my breathing, because cancer cannot grow in a state where there's oxygen available. And if we're over breathing, we are actually limiting oxygen to go to like the skin and certain extremities and muscles. We're limiting oxygen's ability to get there when we're breathing too much. We're blowing too much on the fire. So I learned to slow down my breathing, increase CO2 in the lungs, which increases oxygen in the blood. So this was something that I've discovered along with the chemical warfare that has really catapulted, I guess, my health forward, and taking my own health in my own hands and being responsible for my own choices.
Wow, you know, I had never heard that before, and, you know, it's so, I mean, because everything I've heard has always been, you know, to increase, you know, the breath, you know, and hold it, and, you know, and kind of be a little bit more controlled.
I'm a yoga instructor, and I taught yoga for over 10 years, and of course we're taught take a nice deep breath in, and then we're using muscles to exhale it all out, right? But what I learned is the breath in should be relaxed, and then the breath out should be passive and relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
So over time, when you're focusing on your breath and when you're just watching your breath and what it's doing, you notice that you're taking big breaths in and big breaths out. You're using those muscles as you exhale that should not be used. And so when you start to sit, take a nice gentle breath in, relax the belly, and sometimes the exhale can go for a while. And then when you're relaxed, you get to a point where you're exhaling, and before your next inhale, there's that space. And it's that space that you can get into that reduces so much stress in the body. You actually let go of a lot of energy when you're allowing yourself to slow down your breathing. You're increasing oxygen in the body. It doesn't make sense. You would think the opposite, right?
Yeah.
Take in more air to bring oxygen to the body. But I've learned to relax and slow down and only breathe through the nose and then let the exhale become passive.
Well, you've just changed my nighttime routine. So,
right?
Dramatically. Very much so.
Well, you know what?
That might be why I was awake.
Let me know.
Yeah, I
definitely
will.
Definitely let me know what you think of it. You know, allow yourself a good 10, 15 minutes to just sit, let the belly just hang out. Don't hold the belly at all, because holding in the belly actually restricts the diaphragm. And so if you allow the belly to just hang out, relax, the diaphragm has more room to move, and it doesn't need that much movement when you're slowing down and relaxing your breath. And that natural CO2 that rises in the lungs is a natural muscle relaxer. And a lot of us, including me, you know, I was trained in massage therapy. We're trained that CO2 is bad, right? Oh, you got to get rid of that CO2. We need a certain level, and this you can research yourself. There's lots of medical documentation out there. We need between 5 and 7% CO2 in the blood in order to have that oxygen exchange in the cells.
Wow.
If we need 5 to 7% CO2 in the lungs, we have less than 1% in the air. That means the diaphragm has to do that work. It has to hold that CO2. So small breaths in and then relax breaths out. Allow the CO2 to build up. And obviously the best way to build up CO2 is to exercise. Exercise builds CO2.
Okay, well, boy, between you and then I had a gentleman on a couple of days ago, Dean Slider, who wrote a book called Natural Meditation. I mean, and I thought I had learned everything I needed to about meditation, but boy, there are so many things I learned from that, and then from you tonight, it's just like my whole routine is changed, and it's great, you know, because I think these are things that, you know, there are a lot of myths out there, you know, or things that maybe we were trained, you know, that, you know, this is the way that it should be, but, you know, later discover that, you know, maybe we didn't know everything we thought we should.
Exactly. And, you know, and this is kind of new information coming out for me, too, because I have 10 years of teaching yoga that I have to undo. But the response that I'm getting from people is like, I never knew that slowing down my breath could cause me to relax so much. And when we increase our breathing to that point, we're triggering cortisol and adrenaline. So we're constant, and especially if you mouth breathe, if you're mouth breathing and you're breathing through your mouth, you're taking in more oxygen than you need. So always try and breathe through your nose. And I actually have a couple of clients where they gently use like surgical tape, you know, like it's made of like the cloth material. Just put a little tape right over your lips to prevent you from breathing through your mouth when you sleep. Then you'll get a better night's sleep because you're only breathing through your nose, so you're taking in only enough air through the nose. That's why our nose is there. It's there to filter the air, and it's also there to not take in too much.
Okay, boy, I'll tell you, I'm going to have to get some of that tape. wow. Well, this is great. Now, one of the things that I'd kind of like to talk a little bit about is in your book, you also have a chapter called Creating Inner Space. And I'm real curious as to, you know, why that's a part of your book and exactly what is it that you mean by creating that inner space?
You know, the inner space is, it's not meant to have anything fill it. It's that space where the soul resides, I guess. And I can speak from a woman's perspective. Some of us love to do things and shop to kind of fill that space. We want to fill that space with a man or a new pair of shoes or something tangible that we want to fill that space with. But what we're not realizing is that space is for us. It's for the soul. It's not meant to be filled. And so when you go inside into that empty space and you just allow yourself to just be, you find that you don't need those shoes and you don't need anything that you think you need externally is a reminder to connect internally with that space.
Okay,
because
so
we want to look outside ourselves to constantly find something to fill that space, whether it's alcohol, sex, whatever that is that we need to fill that space with. Well, create that empty space that you don't need anything to fill it because you are enough.
Okay, so you're not talking about like a feeling of emptiness, correct?
Correct. But okay. It does feel like a feeling of emptiness.
Okay, because that's where I'm, I know that I've had so many, shows where intuitive people have been on and I've had many and female callers, a lot of times there is that sense of emptiness or that, needing something to fill or fulfill. And and so what you're saying is to really become comfortable and allow that to exist.
Yes, because we're constantly bombarded with things that we're told we need.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Our outside experiences is telling us what we need. So we're using that to fill that space inside. That space inside is where you find your passion. That's where you find your bliss. And it has to be emptied. If it's filled with stuff, you're never going to find your bliss. You're never going to find your passion.
Mm.
You got to clear out the stuff and let it be empty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can understand that, and it's, I think that belief is such a major divergence from what you see every day. I mean, like you say, we're constantly bombarded with information and suggestions to fill that space,
Exactly.
That's important in order to be fulfilled, that the space is filled.
Exactly. Or we'll do something like, I'm going to have this Dairy Queen because I deserve it. Okay? So you have to fill that space thinking that you deserve something. Well, what's the opposite of deserve something? Worthy. So the opposite is you were unworthy. But if you just went in that space and said, I'm good where I'm at right now. I don't need to be rewarded. I don't have the need to deserve something.
Mm.
And just allow that space to just be. Because the need to deserve something, I deserve this, that means there's the opposite. Are you worthy? In that moment, you're feeling worthy, which means there's also feelings of unworthiness.
Yeah, so the feeling, the idea of I deserve is a way to support worthiness, I guess. For oneself, to kind of give a rationality for being worthy.
Yes. So in that moment, you think you're worthy.
I deserve this.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Absolutely. Which means there's other moments where you're not worthy. But if you let those go and just, absolutely.
Okay, well, good. Well, boy, I understand that. That makes perfect sense. And next time I feel like I'm going to desire something, it's like, wait a minute, just take a step back there, Robert. well, good. That's great. And I really like that idea. I mean, the the idea of creating that inner space and being comfortable with it as being
and
a,
I noticed
a source.
That, yeah, absolutely. And I noticed that when I do the breathing and I quiet myself and I quiet my breathing and I slow it down and I get to that point, it might take 15 minutes to kind of get to that point to relax into your breath, taking a small breath in and allowing the exhale to just do what it does. After a while, the exhale feels like it seems to go on and on and on. But then you'll get to that point where you're not inhaling and not exhaling. That's where you can feel that void or that space. And this is where you can really connect with your soul and find out, okay, what is my passion if you haven't already found it? It seems like you found it, Robert. But for those listening, you know, finding your passion, you got to really quiet and get into that space.
Yeah, that's true. I'm discovering every day that I'm more passionate than I thought. we're down to the last few minutes here, Denise. But before we go, I did want to mention also that your book, you have a section on resources and references. That's great. Is that for someone who is coping with cancer and maybe some of the resources and references that you used in your journey?
The resources and references, I know that I mentioned a couple of books in the book, and so I wanted to make sure I had those resources and references in there. So everything that I mentioned in the book, I made sure to put a resource in there so that people, if they wanted to look more, like, for example, I talk about Jill Bolte Taylor and her talk, and so people can go to TED Talk and see more about her talk and stuff like that, and Louise Hayes and stuff like that. So those are the resources, anything I mentioned in the book, if anybody wanted to find out more information.
That's great. That's great. Well, before we close, so what is it that you hope that your book will bring forth with the reader and maybe any of the experiences that you've had from those who have read your book?
Probably that, you know, it's so dark when you're getting the diagnosis of cancer, and I'm hoping that this book is the light that somebody can see, okay, there is a light in all of this. And sometimes when you're just getting that diagnosis, you can't see it.
Yeah, that's really important, you know, because it is a very challenging time for people, and it's a marker in one's life, you know, really, you know, where it's kind of like a fork in the road for many people. And well, Denise, thank you for your time. Boy, we're going to have to make this more often than every couple
thank
of years.
Thank you. I'd love to do readings. That would be lovely.
Okay. Well, we'll do that. We'll definitely do that. Yes.
Absolutely.
I don't do that very often anymore, but I would love to have that with you. And we'll definitely schedule that. I'll contact you offline and we'll do that. But thank you for your time today. I really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, Robert. It was a pleasure.
Very much. Thank you. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Denise Van Vliet, author of Happy Birthday, You Have Cancer. And again, I do have a direct link to her book, which is available at Amazon.com in the show page description, as well as a direct link to Denise's website, www.denisevanvliet.com. That also is in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.